Okay. So just to explain the overall organization of the sugya, right? Sometimes the bigger the sugya, sometimes the harder it is to keep track of where things are going. Basically, the way we've been organizing things is that we first went through the different types of Yihara Layavor, right? Averos Chamuros, Shmad, Farhesya, all the details therein. And now we're going to be moving on to the called the exceptions to Yihara Layavor, right? Namely, Karka Olam and Hanasa Atzma. So obviously, you know, when discussing, you know, the different types, the different cases of Yihara Layavor, we obviously discuss the exceptions, because the exceptions, you know, highlighted, you know, the nature of the different mechayvim, etc., etc. But now we're going to just go through, you know, the exceptions of Karka Olam and Hanas Atzmo, each, you know, each by themselves, and to highlight some important things which we haven't covered. Again, there will be some overlap, but hopefully mostly covering new things. Okay, so with that, let's just see the Gemara, which we've read in the past, but just, you know, see the Gemara, which, you know, cites these two important exceptions. You want to go for it? Adam? Esther Farhesia have I?
Esther Farhesia have I?
Oh, so was it Tasha?
Esther was in Farhesia, yes, still included some sort of a layer out there, but we see that there's either we should see there, or maybe that Farhesia isn't.
That's Pepasha. So Pepasha, the Gemara is challenging and saying, oh, is it true that the, you know, that Farhesia alone, but if that were the case, so then Esther, being a tzaddikas as she was, would not have, you know, been yavur kavur val tehareg in the case at hand. But before we even go on to, you know, the answers, just to stop here, I should have mentioned this at the time when we were discussing Farhesia, which is an important, you know, issue regarding Farhesia, which comes out of the question, right? The big question when it comes to Farhesia is, what exactly is the geder of Farhesia? And basically, right, and the big issue there is, does Farhesia, which we know requires, you know, a total of 10 people, but do they need to actually see the violation, or does it suffice for them to know about the violation? So again, the Pepashas, you Farhesia, is like, it's always like, Pesoch, you know, Pesoch, B'nai Yisrael, the Pashas is that they have to witness it, but we're going to see that some people actually infer from this question that that might not be the case. So basically, the two options are, again, is that you actually need Re'iyah, or is that the idea? So according to the first, let's say, the normative option, that it's you actually need to see the violation, that'd be simply the Pashat Sigya. Farhesia, the question is, then how do you understand Esther? Why is it a case of Farhesia? But Pashtus, nobody was there for the actual Ma'asabiyah. So why does the Gemara assume that it's Farhesia to characterize Esther as a case of Farhesia? So the Chiddush HaRan, seemingly going within this first approach that you do need Re'iyah, he basically says that the reason why this Esther is a case of Farhesia is because the Lekicha, Achashverosh basically took Esther bifnei Asar. It was in the middle of Shushan, in the middle of the capital, and Mistamba, there were 10 people there. So again, the Chiddush HaRan, again on the spot, seems to be assuming that Re'iyah is the Koveh, but his Chiddush is that the, you know, the timing in the case of Esther, it's not only the Ma'asabiyah, but it also the Lekicha suffices. And the idea seems to be, and in this, perhaps specifically in this context where it's, you know, against her will, that we view the Lekicha as the Tchilas Biyah. Again, a lot of times you have an halacha where a Hechsher, if it automatically will lead, you know, to the end, will basically, you basically integrate that into an elongated Ma'as. So in this case, since in the case where it's Baal Korcha, where the Lekicha will automatically, inevitably lead to the Biyah, so basically we can view the Lekicha as a Tchilas Biyah, and therefore we say, oh, as long as the Lekicha was viewed by the public, that suffices for a din of Farhesia. Let's just finish it up. And the other approach is to say, no, Nuchach Mikan, it's clear from the Gemara's characterization of the case of Esther as one of Farhesia, that all you need is Yediyah. You don't need to witness it, you don't need 10 people to witness it, as long as 10 people know about the violation, that will constitute a case of Farhesia. And the Tshuvas HaRadvaz, the one we quoted in the context of, you know, Islam, that whole discussion there of Avas Hashem, I think it's Chelek Dalid Simen Tzadi Beis. So there, the beginning of his answer, when he's going through the case, whether the case in the Shaila is a case of Shmad or Farhesia, he basically makes it clear, he says, oh, the fact that the Gemara characterizes the case of Esther as Farhesia, that proves that the Koveya of Farhesia is Yediyah, and you don't need Re'iyah. So again, two approaches to the Geder Farhesia coming out of this question of Esther Farhesia.
What was the kicha we were talking about?
In fact, I mean, when Achashverosh's people took Esther to the palace, or like grabbed her, however, whatever the case was, that was done in public.
Oh, that's referring to that. I thought referring to the leader, after the story had already developed. And then,
yeah, it seems like that's what we're on. It seems to be saying it. It sounds like no, I guess.
And she should have been more sure
at that point.
Yeah, because
knowing that there was going to be again, if you assume that she was married, and then obviously the reason why she was being taken originally, even for the trials, was for Zvia. Yeah. So that's an important point. In contrast, Kasher Avadati Avadati, you know, that's the Gemara. But definitely the way the Kedusha Ran understands the case is that the Maisa Bia is referring to that first one.
And firstly, in Ayah Mishpat mentioned that Sfar also, that since Esther was Vadai when she was taken, what was going to happen? That's,
oh yeah? That's okay, very good, interesting.
And also just in terminology, So comparing Yudia and Re'ia, I'm not sure if the Re'ia says Bidafko Re'ia. I mean, in terms of maybe some sort of pirsum, you could say the highest level of pirsum is like, you know, almost like an Avis type thing, you might have to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if, I don't know, maybe it's about, you know, presence versus idea. Because especially in terms of, you know, Dom Shrek Dusha, you know, if they can't actually see, but they're there.
Like in what case?
I don't know, they're blind, or it's like, it's, right, I mean, it's clear what's happening, right? Like Raj was like, the same case, like the guy, you know, they go in the S-Road, and like, that's just behind the screen, yeah.
So you're saying, but that's generally characterized as idea. I mean, that Raj in the context of Edekim.
Right, then. So I'm
just trying to say
so
that.
Maybe if the comparison isn't really an idea, maybe it's presence versus idea. Because maybe presence is enough.
All I'm saying is that the example you were giving as an example of Re'iyah is really generally characterized as an example of Yediyah. I mean, the idea of presence, you know, you didn't see the actual giving of the tabas, but you know what happened, or you see, you know, the dam dripping from the knife, whatever. So, generally those are characterized in Halacha as Yediyah. So that would be on the idea side. While Re'iyah, the Pasha just means you actually need to...
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that maybe things that are generally categorized as idea in Halacha in general are still better than the idea of
that's
here,
what you're saying.
Right?
You're saying that the call between presence and just the idea.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Right. It could be that presence, you know, creates a certain close, that actual is.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Okay, so that was just a side point again. That should have been in the Farhesu discussions. I just, you know, because we didn't mention it then, I just want to mention that now. Okay, so getting back to Karka Olam. So yeah, right, so the Gemara answers, and can't go through Gemara. Right? So right, so that was the question. The Gemara asked, "Ha Esther Farhesu Havai?" What are the Gemara's answers?
Rabbi Esther Karka Olam, she's Karka Olam, therefore there's no problem with Farhesu.
Rabbi.
Rabbi Amar, does not ask one shot. The same.
Is it
doing the same thing?
Yeah, I mean,
getting rid of the problem for us.
Okay, yeah, but through two very different ideas, one being Karka Olam, and one being Hanasa Atzma. So the first thing I'd like to discuss in the context of Karka Olam is basically regarding the scope of this Petur. Namely, when does this Petur of Karka Olam apply? So first, you have to discuss right the Gemara's context, right, the context of Parhesia. So here, right, the Machokis is clear, as we just read in the Gemara, where you have in the context of Parhesia, the Machokis potentially is between Abaye and Rabbi. Right, so according to Abaye, right, Abaye is the one who suggests the Heter of Karka Olam, so it's clear according to Abaye that he applies the Heter of Karka Olam in the context of Parhesia. That's clear. All we know from Rava is that he offers an alternative answer to the question of Hanas Asma. And the big question that we're going to investigate now is, what is Rava's position regarding the Heter of Karka Olam? Does he disagree with it? Does he agree with it? What's going on in regards to Rava's perspective of Karka Olam, which is going to be very important because we generally paskin like Rava over Abaye, and this is not one of the cases of Yalpagam. So basically, trying to ascertain what exactly is the perspective of Rava regarding the Heter of Karka Olam is going to be very important, how this Heter of Karka Olam will carry down L'maisa. So again, so the big question analyzes machlokas Rabban Abayi is basically whether this machlokas is mutually exclusive, right? They're obviously offering different answers, but are there different answers mutually exclusive? Oh. So the first option is to say that they're not mutually exclusive, that although basically, right, Rava suggests an alternative answer for Nas Atzmo, he still agrees to the heter of Karka Ola. So one shita in the Rishonim that it comes out of is the shita of the Rivam, right? The Rivam is quoted in both our Tosos, Dir Maaskal Baha Esther Far Hesher Havai, and the Tosos in Ksubis, Gimel Amid Beis, right? And both Tosos of them are in essence asking the question, again coming from different vantage points, but in essence are asking the question, why does the Gemara here focus on Far Hesya? Why isn't the Gemara come on to the factor of Arayos? We know there's the Zihar Layavar by the big three. So, and assuming for the question that Esther was married to Mordechai, so she should also be in Gila Arayos. So why is the Gemara not coming on to the answer of Gila Arayos? So the Rivam, in both places, basically answers that the, right, and this is important, in the context of Ksubis, really, right, it's an alternative context, where basically Tosos there, again, asks, right, the context there in the Gemara is discussing the case of Takana of being Boel to the Hegmon Tchila, and right, in passing the Gemara is in Hoshach Levitara, the Gemara has a line, Belidish Lehu to Ones Shari. The Gemara is asking, why is this Takana, you know, generate an issue of Sakana, like the Gemara said in the line before, just tell these Nashim that it's Mutzer to be Boel, to be Nivellas to the Hegmon Boones. So on there, the Tosos asks, what do you mean? Gila, I mean, if obviously she's Mikudeshes, so therefore there should be Gila Rayos. Why is the Gemara suggesting that it's Mutter? There should be Harei Bayabor, Tehare Gval Tabor for the Isha because of the problem of Arayos. So it's to both of these questions, really one and the same, basically, why don't you have this Isha Gila Rayos in the context of Achashverosh or in the case of the Bilas Hegmon? And in both cases, the Rivam answers basically by saying it's a factor of Karka Olam. And the factor of Karka Olam, clearly, according to the Rivam, clearly applies in the context of Arayos, of the big three. Right, that's the point of the Rivam, and he points out, oh, the Chiddush is just to extend, man, the Chiddush of Abaye is just to extend it to the context of Far Hesher. But what's coming out, especially from Ksubis, is that Rivam is quoting the Shita of Abaye, of Karka Olam. And again, if you think about generally Paskin like Rava over Abaye, so it seems that the Rivam at least thinks that Rava agrees, again, Lamaisa, that we, Paskin like Rava, still agree to the Psak, to the Heter of Karka Olam.
But how does he get it?
What?
It seems like a straight cloaking on
it. Oh, very good. So that's the question. But basically, Rivam, again, unless you wanted to say, oh, the Rivam is paskin like Abaye, which is strange, right? It seems to be somehow that Rava agrees to the heter of Karka Olam. And now we have to now assess how exactly to understand the Machlokes and the Gemara in that light.
Where does the Rivam say that Karka Olam gets rid of the problem but does ask more you within Rava?
Get there in a second. Oh, right. If you're pointing out that all we know from Rivam is that he applies in the context of the Verus Lamuros, yeah, we'll get to that. For all we know now is that the Rivam basically paskins the heter of Karka Olam. So the question is, it seems like he's agreeing to the heter of Karka Olam. That seems to be a baye against Rava. So what's going on? Right, and you have to say that obviously Rava agrees to the heter of Karka Olam, so then how do you assess the Gemara here? So one idea is just to say that Abaye offered the first answer, Karka Olam, and Rava is just giving an additional answer. Right? It's not a machlokes. It's just Rava is offering an additional answer, and if there's no machlokes at all, that Rava agrees to Karka Olam in all contexts. And that, according to this first interpretation, getting to your point, Bane in the case of the big three, Bane in the case of Farhesia, Rava agrees with Karka Olam in all cases. The second interpretation is say, no, they really are arguing. The Machokas Rava and Abaye is a Machokas here. So then why are we paskining? Why do we assume that Rava will agree to Karka Olam in the cases of Balaitosis? That gets to the chilek between the right, the application of karka olam in the case of farhesia and the case of the averus chamorus. According to the second approach, in a chanami, Rava argues in an abaye regarding the application of karka olam to the context of farhesia, but he agrees to karka olam being a heter in the context of the averus chamorus. And right, this chilek, right, this notion that it's easier to apply, or here, even the maskara, you would apply the heter of karka olam specifically to the averus chamorus and not to farhesia, again, that's very much Rivam l'shitasa. Because if you recall, the Rivam, even within Abaye, the way he set up the sugya, right, remember the way he did his original question, is that, of course Abaye knew that there was a notion of karka olam for arayos. The chiddush of Abaye is to even apply the heter of karka olam to the case of farhesia. So it's clear that the way the Rivam learns Abaye, even within Abaye, that the application of karka olam to farhesia is more mechudash than the application of karka olam to the case of averus chamorus. So now we're just saying that perhaps that same chilek, which was a havamina within Abaye, ends up being the maskana within Rava. That Rava actually holds to that chilek. That Rava, of course, agrees to the heter karka olam by arayos, by the averus chamorus, and only rejects it in regards to farhesia. And what's the svara of that chilek? We'll get to this a little later, but just the idea seems to be that if you understand the heter of karka olam, right, this idea of, you know, being sheva taisa, as being that because you haven't been active in the case, therefore the maisa is not matsurah to you. Right? In general, that's like one approach to onis, right? Because it was under duress, it wasn't, you weren't under control, therefore, you know, that breaks the tzirah between the maisa and the particular god. So it could be that the Rivam understands karka olam as working in the same way. When you're sheva taisa, when you're karka olam, the maisa is not matsurah to the gavra. But perhaps that only has an impact in the context of the averus chamorus, where the mechayev is the violation of the avera. So as long as you break the tzirah between the avera and the gavra, it's not going to be a problem. But when it comes to farhesia, perhaps, you know, right, the mechayev of farhesia is not limited to a case where you have the violation of the avera. As we pointed out, in cases of farhesia, it could be v'chai behem, it already neutralizes the avera. It's all about the perception of chilul Hashem. So therefore, even in this case, even though it's pasha that karka olam works by the avera's chamuras to break the tzirah between the maisa and the gavra, that notion of karka olam might not extend to farhesia to neutralize the chilul Hashem. So the chiddush of Abaye is that it does, and we'll get to why it does perhaps later. That according to Abaye, no, karka olam, beyond breaking the tziruf to the gavra in the context of, you know, averus chamorus, also works in the context of chilul Hashem to mitigate, you know, to neutralize the chilul Hashem aspect. But Rava says, no, the only thing it breaks, the, you know, the tziruf between the maisa and the gavra, therefore it's only limited, basically it's limited to the averus chamorus, but doesn't extend to the context of farhesia, where as long as there's a perception of violation, it doesn't matter whether halachically, you know, the avera is mitzuruf to you or not. Fine. So basically, so far, basically discussed, right, the Shita of the Rivam, who thinks that the basically Abaye and Rava here are not necessarily mutually exclusive, that Rava could agree to the notion of karka olam. Two options in terms of, does he agree with it in all contexts, or was it only agreed to it in the context of the averos chamuros. So now moving on to the Shita, which thinks that, no, this is a mutually exclusive machokes. Once we pass him like Rava, we reject the heter of karka olam completely. And this is the Rambam. Right? The Rambam in Hilchos Yesod HaTorah Parakei famously never cites the heter of karka olam. And the Pash Pshat seems to be, he understands this is a machlokes Rav and Abaye, and we pass him like Rava. So he only cites the heter of Hanas Atzmo, but never cites the heter of karka olam. So again, Rambam presumably learns machlokes Rav and Abaye as the one which is mutually exclusive. Each Shita disagrees with the other, you know, Shita's answer, and therefore, once we pass the like Rava, we reject the heter of karka olam completely. Oh, just one ara I heard from my father-in-law in this context is that the fact that the Rambam basically learns the sugi this way might be very much l'shitaso to his perspective on the averus chamorus. In what sense? We presented before that one way to understand how Rava could even, you know, agree to karka olam, all right, the second option we gave before, is that perhaps Rava only disagrees with Abaye in the context of farhesia, but agrees that but agrees to karka olam in the context of averos chamuros. As you pointed out that right before, that in order to make such a chilek b'tchil Hashem between farhesya and averos chamuros, you basically have to say that while the mechayev of the averos chamuros is the chumras ha'iser, that's different than the mechayev of farhesya, which is chil Hashem, and therefore you can have a chilek that perhaps, you know, the rabba could hold that the, you know, the heter of karka olam will work in the context of the chumras ha'iser because it breaks its zero between the gavra and the ma'isa, but it doesn't work in the context of chil Hashem. But the Rambam, the Shitaso, who clearly holds that even the averos chamuros for sure have a mechayev of chil Hashem, perhaps that's, you know, one of two, or, you know, according to most people, according to a lot of people, it's the only. But either way, it's clear from the Rambam in Hilchos Sodei Torah that there is at least a component to the Averos Chamuros of Chil Hashem. So therefore, once you think the Averos Chamuros also have a Chil Hashem, and once you think that Rava rejects the Heter Karka Olam in the context of Farhesya of Chil Hashem, and basically say, oh, you see that Rava, you know, doesn't think that Karka Olam works to mitigate, to neutralize Chil Hashem, so you can't. The Rambam Lishitaso is not now open to saying that, oh, although it doesn't work in Farhesya, perhaps it's going to work by Averos Chamuros. Because once it doesn't mitigate, you know, the Chil Hashem in the context of Farhesya, it's not going to work for Averos Chamuros, which also have a Mechayev of Chil Hashem. So again, perhaps the Rambam Lishitaso, that once he reads that this is a mutually exclusive machlokes, he's not open to making that chilek that the Rambam might be open to by b'mechalek between, you know, the nature of Mechayev for Averos Chamuros and that of the Farhesya. Fine, makes sense. Basically, when we said, the second suggestion we had for the Rebbe is that the way he understands Rava, that although he understands the Machlokes in her Gemara, Rava is rejecting Karka Olam in the Gemara, perhaps that's limited to Farhesya. Right? The Rebbe perhaps learned that while Rava rejects the application of Karka Olam to Farhesya, he agrees that Karka Olam applies to Averos Chamuros. We point out the way to explain that chilek, because when Mimar Avshach, because either you have that Heter Karka Olam or you don't have that Heter. We pointed out, if you think that, you know, the Averos Chamuros is a very different Mechayev than Farhesya, then you can say Karka Olam works for one Mechayev but not the other. Namely, right, it works for Mechayev of Averos Chamuros, Chumras Iser, but doesn't work to neutralize the Chil Hashem. But the Rambam, who thinks that even the Averos Chamuros have the components of Chil Hashem, once you see that it doesn't, that Karka Olam doesn't work for Chil Hashem in the context of Farhesya, then it's clear that the Rambam cannot then apply it in the context of Averos Chamuros, because he thinks that that too has the Mechayev of Chil Hashem, which is, again, which is not mitigated, which is not neutralized by the factor of Karka Olam. Okay, so Adkan, right, the discussion of whether Karka Olam as a heter applies to Farhesya, again, Machlokes Abaye and Rava, and different approaches within Rava as to whether he's rejecting Karka Olam in all cases. Fine. So now moving on to the Gimel Averos, which again is not mentioned in the Gemara, because the Gemara only cites the factor of Karka Olam in the context of Farhesya, but the question you have to now, you know, look into is whether, again, the heter of Karka Olam applies to the Averos Chamuros. So again, we're going to get to some of the same Rishonim. And the first approach is to say that the Ptur of Karka Olam, again, not only applies in the context of Farhesya, but also applies in the context of the Averos Chamuros. Again, this is the Rivam that we were citing before. You know, again, the very context of the Rivam is to apply the Heter of Karka Olam in the context of Arayas. And it's important to note that, remember, what's the Raya from the Rivam? How does the Rivam know that the Heter of Sheva Chaisa of Karka Olam applies to Arayos? It comes from the Svara of Rotzeach, right? He points out, since the Herak Layabur of Arayos comes from a Hekish from the Svara of Rotzeach, and he says, oh, the Svara of, right, we discussed in Pashirim, the Svara of Rotzeach, of Maichazis, basically dictates you just have to be Sheva Taisa, says Tosfos, right? Says Rebam. And since the Svara of Maichazis just, you know, requires a posture of Sheva Taisa, so therefore, in a case where if you're being Karka Olam Sheva Taisa, even if that means you're going to be over the Isser, it's not going to be a problem. It's just like you see in the case of the Svara, where if you're threatened to be killed or to be thrown on a baby, as long as you're being Sheva Taisa, it's fine. So it says the Rivam, that same heter of Karka Olam of Sheva Taisa should carry over to the realm of Arayos. So say that as long as you're Karka Olam, as long as you're Sheva Taisa, the Harabayavor of Arayos does not apply. Fine. But now,
Oh,
sorry. Can you make out in the Rambam?
I'm about to get back. There is a little bit of a level of chiddush even within the Rambam, because like theoretically you could have said that Rambam, that according to the Rambam Shita, if you would have had a tzira between karka olam and hadas atzma, in the case of tzit, that might have been able to give him out to the gilomir of Eretz Tamura.
Over there?
As in, there was room to say within the Rambam that the whole disrespectful argument is that since the Rambam holds that there's a measure of Chilul Hashem even Gimel Averus Kumuros even like the Tzinah, therefore Karak Olam can never alone take away.
Because once you see Karak Olam,
because there's always Chilul Hashem. But according to that, if you let's say you had Karak Olam and Hanas Atzma together,
the Rambam holds that Hanas Atzma works alone. Oh, you're saying because Hanas Atzma doesn't work by Averus Kumuros?
Yeah, as I'm saying that there's we said within the Rambam that there are two items, there's Chilul Hashem and there's Kumaras HaNisim.
Yeah, you're saying something.
So Hanas Atzma alone can't work because it's still Kumaras HaNisim, and then Karak Olam alone can't work because it's still Chilul Hashem.
So you're saying what about combining
the two together? You might there was room to say that they could have worked.
That's interesting. That's interesting. That's a good point. Correct. Very interesting. Yeah, very. Okay, so I'm not trying the Rambam, right? So while the Reeve. You have a question? Okay. Alright, so in terms of the Averus Chamuros, while we saw the Rivam clearly applying, you know, the Heter of Karka Olam to the Averus Chamuros, again, based on the Hekesh between the Svara of Ritzicha and the Harle Avor for Arayos, right? That's what the Rivam basically applies Karka Olam to Arayos. In contrast to that, you have other Rishonim who seem to reject the Heter of Karka Olam to Arayos. So again, number one is the Rambam, right? Because the Rambam, as we pointed out, basically omits Karak Olam in all contexts, right? Bane b'farhesya, bane for the Averus Chamuros. So it's clear that the Rambam, right, seems to reject the Heter of Karak Olam entirely. So the big question on the Rambam, this is what Reb Chaim deals with, and we did this partially before, we'll just, you know, review, because this is an important context that Reb Chaim is really dealing with, is the question that the Reb Chaim asks on the Rambam is that basically Tosos seems to have a very good raya, right? Rivam's raya from Ritzicha to Arayo seems to be very strong. It seems to be clear, right, that the heter, you know, that there, you know, that the svara of Maichazes doesn't, you know, force a person to be killed instead of being thrown on a baby. Because, right, the svara of Maichazes applies in the opposite direction. Who says, you know, that the other, you know, life is greater than yours? So once it's clear that the svara, you know, allows for Sheva Taisa in the context of Ritzicha, Then there's a hekesh to Arayos. So why doesn't the Rambam agree with the simple cheshbon of the Rivam to carry over the heter of Sheva Taisa from Ritzicha to Arayos? So that's the question that the Reb Chaim contends with. And Reb Chaim there, as we saw in Pashirim, basically offers two answers. We'll just, you know, summarize it, because it isn't right. It's really in the context of Karak Olam. Right, so the first answer of Reb Chaim is that basically, the assumption of the question is true, in the sense that really the heter, sorry, let's say it's like this, that the Yehar Vayavur in the context of Ritzicha, based on the Svara, does require a posture of Sheva Taisa. So that analysis of the question is right. Then the question is, okay, well, so once it's Mechayev Sheva Taisa, right, so then it should carry over. So the big first answer of Chaim says that basically, this understanding of Yehar Le'Yavur is basically just requiring, you know, this posture of Sheva Taisa is limited to the context of Ritzicha, where you have this notion of a clash between two equal values, right? Because, right, you have two Nefashos. Maichazes dictates that they're equal, therefore they neutralize each other, and therefore you don't know what to do, and you can't act, so therefore that requires Sheva Taisa. And it says Reb Chaim, right? Again, and therefore, you know, the construct, you know, the nature of the Harle Avor there is to say that in Echanami, you know, the Vera could be Nitches, but at the end of the day, you know, you can't act, so you have to be Sheva Taisa. But says Reb Chaim, that model of the Harle Avor does not carry over to the realm of Arayos. Because he says, you have two values. There's Vechai Behem on the one hand, and then there's the Vera of Arayos. So the question is, which one is better? So he says, it's impossible for that to be, you know, a tie, for that to be a wash. And we explained, like, last time, that it could be that, according to Reb Chaim, the only time you can have, like, an exact, you know, standstill is when it's the exact same thing, like a nefesh. You know, the two nefashos are exactly the same thing. But when there are two different values in halacha, on one hand, you have a chai behem, on the other hand, you have the avera of erva, of gila arayas, halacha has to take a stand on which one's greater. So you can't have this model of, oh, there's a standstill, and therefore, the mechayev is shevataisa. So says Reb Chaim, it must therefore be that the mechanics of Yehari Vayavar by Erva are completely different. And it's rather that the din, the carryover Yehari Vayavar, basically dictates that the Avera at hand of Erva, of Gila Rayos, is not Nitzches. And once the Avera is not Nitzches, then it's even problematic to be involved in the Avera, even B'Shei Valtais. So again, we pointed out in another shir, in the third shir, that, you know, basically Reb Chaim has this, you know, idea where basically the Hekesh carries over a very different nature of Yehari Vayavar. Basically, Yehari Vayavar by Ritzicha takes on, you know, a Sheval Taisa idea, you know, nature, while the Yehari Vayavar in the case of Arayos has nothing to do with Sheval Taisa. It's about the Aveira not being Nitzches, and therefore even Sheval Taisa is going to be problematic. So basically, the first answer of Reb Chaim is to say that basically in a Hanami you have this Heter Sheva Tais in the context of Ritzicha that doesn't carry over to Erva, which is a completely different model, completely different nature of Yehari Vayavar, where the Avera is not Nitzches, and therefore it's even problematic to be involved in the Avera B'Shev Val Taisa, B'Kar Ko Olam. That's the first answer of Reb Chaim. The second answer of Reb Chaim is that, to basically completely undermine, you know, the assumption of the question. The assumption of the question is that, you know, the heter, in the case of Ritzicha, of allowing yourself to be thrown a baby, is based on this notion of, you know, that the svara is only mechayev, a posture of Sheval Taisa. And Reb Chaim in the second answer rejects that and says, no, that's not what's going on. Really, the yisod of the svara of Maichazes is basically to dictate that the factor of mechayev has been neutralized, that because there's a mechayev for each nefesh, therefore they cancel each other out, therefore there's no v'chai ben, and therefore m'mela, the avera of Ritzicha is not nitches. So therefore, according to that alone, you would think that therefore any involvement in the avera of Ritzicha should be problematic. So even if you were involved in a Ritzicha in a Sheva Taisa manner, it would be problematic. Oh, so why then would there be a heter in the case of being thrown on a baby? That's not even his chiddush, is that it's a third category. Beyond the first two categories of being involved in Avera B'Kumbase, category one, category number two, being involved in Avera B'Sheval Taisa, and then the third category, where you're not involved Ki Huzeh, but you're rather just a Chetzah, Ke'itz Ve'Even, in the Lashon of Reb Chaim. So according to Reb Chaim, even the within the second approach, right, that the that even in the case of Ritzicha, the vort of the svar is that it neutralizes v'chai behem, and therefore the avera of Ritzicha is not nitches. There, even so, and therefore any involvement in the avera of Ritzicha is going to be subject to Yehari Vayavar. Even so, there's a heter in the case of being on a baby, because in that case you're not involved in the avera of Ritzicha at all. You were just the chetzah. You were basically just the bullet, not involved in the shooting of the bullet in any way. Oh, and according to the second explanation, then of course you understand why when the Hekesh carries over the Yehari Vayavar from Ritzicha to Arayos, why there is no heter of Karka Olam of Sheval Taisa, because there, according to the second approach, there was never even a heter of Sheval Taisa in the original context of Ritzicha, and therefore for sure there's not going to be a heter of Sheval Taisa of Karka Olam in the context of Arayos. So that's the second explanation of Reb Chaim as to why there is never, according to the Rambam, there is never a heter of Karka Olam for any of the Averos Chamuros, because the Vort of Havayavar is that the Avera, that the V'chai Behem, basically that the Avera is not Nitzches Bifne V'chai Behem, and therefore any involvement, even B'Sheval Taisa, in one of the big three, is going to be subject to Yehari Vayavar.
Just clarify, the case of Hanach
Shizikul is called
Latino.
Yeah.
Wasn't that case, right?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, Reb Chaim just says, right, it makes sense. Exactly. I happen to agree. Right. Again, he didn't have to say he had agreed, but I think because the idea is in the Svara.
Mentioning that case sort of like already tells me Svara, like, you have to come up with some reason.
Yeah, because he's saying it's not covered. He's saying it's not covered by the Svara of my chazos.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's, and he wants to be able to agree with that. Yeah, 100%. I'm not aware of any Tosefta Yerushalmi who has that. I guess there forces around him. It just seems like, or forces of Chaim, is rather that, you know, it's just the Svara of my chazos doesn't seem to require you to be Yehari Vayavar in such a case, and therefore he tries to explain that.
They said that Rav Chaim said that if you let yourself be thrown on the tinuk, that's not musicha at all. Is that a chiddush?
Yes.
It's
a very subtle distinction between. It's hard to know exactly where to draw a line between I think I was discussing with Ariel back when you first quoted it. What exactly is the distinction between these categories 2 and 3? Between, Ritzicha, B'shei Bal Taisa, and being just a Chatzah. It's a very subtle distinction.
He says that Ritzicha, B'shei Bal Taisa doesn't really exist.
Yeah. No, I'm saying.
Oh.
Correct. But. Just defining the difference between a Shei Bal Taisa and a Chefza is difficult. I know some guys are trying to think about this. We got diving boards involved, a lot of different tsiurim about how do you maybe theoretically or why maybe there could be a case of Ritzicha b'Shei Bal Taisa. But forget whether it's theoretical or not. Just the distinction between Shei Bal Taisa and being a chafta is very subtle, and perhaps it would seem to be again. While Reb Chaim wants to say that Tosos agrees to his chiluk and the way he has you set it up, Reb Chaim says, "Oh, Tosos of course agrees to that idea that the case of the case of being thrown on a tinok that you're in the eights of Evan." And he's saying he doesn't really bring a raya from that case. He's really bringing raya from a theoretical Shei Bal Taisa, Ritzicha case, which doesn't really exist, to the Shei Bal Taisa in the case of Rives. But Pashtus Tosos is not making that chiluk. Pashtus Tosos thinks that that case is considered Shei Bal Taisa. So again, that would perhaps be part of this machlokas between the Rambam and Tosos exactly, whether there's a distinction between these categories 2 and 3. Fine. Okay, so while the first Rishon who rejects the Heter Karka Olam by the Averis Chamuros, it was the Rambam. The second one seems to be the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam. And with this we'll get into the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam, again, is also dealing with these questions. In both Tosas, right, is also, in our Tosas, primarily dealing with the question of why the Gemara is ignoring the Mechayev of Erva for Esther. And in the context of Ksuvas Gilmol Beis, there the primary question is why the Gemara is ignoring the fact that these Naros or these Nashim are Murasos and therefore should be subject to the Yehara Vayavar of Arayos. So in both these cases, the way Rabbeinu Tam answers the question, then instead of answering like Rivan, oh, there's a Heter of Karka Olam, he comes on the totally different answer of Bias Akum. So again, we're going to get to the Bias Akum component to his answer in just a moment, but before we get into the Bias Akum aspect of his answer, let's just first deal with the Karka Olam implications of his answer. And it seems, again, that the basically from the fact that Rabbeinu Tam rejects implicitly, doesn't offer the Rivam's answer of Karka Olam, again, it seems implicit that Rabbeinu Tam, it's always not always clear from an omission, but the implication could be that Rabbeinu Tam, the reason why Rabbeinu Tam doesn't offer the answer of Karka Olam in both these contexts is because he doesn't think that the Heter of Karka Olam applies. At least in his context of Arayos. So again, there are two ways to say this. Either he thinks that basically, we paskin like Rava, and Rava completely rejects, Abayi's Heter of Karka Olam. Again, either in all cases, or at least in their case, the only option is to say that he thinks that Rava completely rejects the Heter of Karka Olam. Right, that'd be one way of understanding Rabbeinu Tam, right? The reason why he doesn't mention the factor of Karkolam, because just like the Rambam, we pass like Rava over Abaye, and Rava rejects the Heter of Karkolam. That's one way to say it. Pnei Yeshua, which I signed, hope guys were able to see it this morning. Pnei Yeshua is another interesting idea. That seemingly, he doesn't spell this all out, but it sounds like he's saying that even if it's Machlokas Rava and Abaye, they both agree to each other, at least in the context of Parasya. Still, Rabbeinu Tam is not willing to apply the Heter Karka Olam specifically in the context of Arayos. Why is that? Because he says there's a Gzeiros HaKasuv. He says the Gzeiros HaKasuv, basically of Narim Rasa, right, which is the source, Emo Shiala, right, there's an entire source of Yehara Le'Avor, basically that case, he says, basically, take a step back. He says, the the pasuk, which is mechayev misa for an isha for gila rayos, he says is mechadish that there is no heter of karka olam in the context of gila rayos. Right? That's what Pnei Yeshua says. Again, the fact that there is a gzeras akasuv to apply the chayev misa and gila rayos by namurasa, that proves that there, you know, there's no heter of karka olam. Yeah.
That means that he has very, like, in terms of together karka olam, it's very expansive together.
Exactly. So one of the major assumptions of Rabbeinu Tam is that basically, this is going to be a discussion we get to hopefully in the next couple of days, is that he thinks that an isha is by definition karka olam in regards to ma'asavia. It's like a big question is, you know, whether is there a possibility for an isha to not be karka olam? Because from the perspective of the actual ma'asavia, she's passive. But perhaps, let's say, in regards to the hechsher to the bia, she can be active. So the big lumdas we get to next time is, let's say, her being active in the realm of the hechsher, does that transform even the ma'asavia itself to be one of kumbase? So again, according to Pnei Yeshua, right? If the Pnei Yeshua thought that there was a circumstance where an isha can be kumva aseh, so then his raya would be neutralized, because perhaps the gzeras akasav is only mechayev, right? Is only mechayev gila rayos in the case where the isha is kumva aseh. Pnei Yeshua rather seems to think that no, an isha by definition is karka olam. So since an isha is by definition karka olam, therefore if the fact that the gemara is mechayev, the fact that the Torah is mechayev, in isha and gila rayos, it must be a latent assumption in that gzeras akasav is that it undermining the heter of karka olam. I'll just read the Pnei Yeshua inside. Where is it here? Right, umashalo rotzer Rabbeinu Tam lefarish. He shmites in the liturgical, right? The onis sharis, right? He's in the context of gimel beis ksubis. Shem de karka olami, right? Why does he want to give that answer? Hainim shem de mashmalei de lo mahani taima de karka olam ela le'inyan farhesya. The whole notion of karka olam, again, it seems like he's saying even according to Abaye, is limited to farhesya. Asha inkin le'inyan gilarayos lo mahani karka olam ki the alfina minara murasa de tehareg gal tavor. So saying the fact that there's a din of tehareg gal tavor by Nara Murasa, so that proves that we don't hold of the din of karka olam. So again, there are two assumptions. Number one is that the din of Tehar, that the din of Yaharig Val Yavor by Arayos applies to her, according to the Girsa of Teharig Val Tavor. That's assumption number one. We're going to see some Balitosas disagree with that. And assumption number two is that basically she's always a karka olam. Because again, right, if you assume that there were cases where she wasn't karka olam, you can just limit the tehar val tavor to those cases. So again, those are two assumptions that Pnei Yeshua basically takes in order to explain Rabbeinu Tam. So again, at the end of the day, there are two ways to explain Rabbeinu Tam's relationship to karka olam. Either Rabbeinu Tam completely rejects karka olam in all cases because he thinks that Rava, the machlokas of Rava and Abaye is a mutually exclusive machlokas, or he thinks that no, maybe Rava agrees to karka olam in the context of farhesya, but rejects it in the context of arayos. Just to point out, it's interesting. This is in terms of distinguishing between the two contexts of farhesya and arayos. This is the opposite direction of chilek that we had in the Rivam. If you recall, the Rivam thought that it was more pashut to apply the heter karka olam to the context of arayos than it was to the context of Farhes. Remember, within Abaye, he says, it was Pasha to Abaye that applied to arayos. The Chiddush of Abaye is to apply it to Farhes. And we point out, and it could be the Rivam's understanding of Rava, is that Rava only applies it in the context of Eira and doesn't apply it in the context of Farhes. But Pnei Yeshua, Bedas, Rabbeinu Tam, is taking the Chiluk in the opposite direction. That perhaps the even Abaye basically limits his application of karka olam specifically to the context of farhesya, but even Abaye seemingly would not apply karka olam to the context of arayos because he thinks that the gzeras akasav of tehar matavor for arayos basically upends, undermines the heter of karka olam in that context.
Yes, I mean, just once mentioned that, there should have been an as midir, as I thought, because he's not saying from the fact that there's chiyuv misa for arayos in general, right? He's saying...
That's how I was looking it up, just to make sure.
Okay, right.
Yeah, actually, I had down in my notes that it was originally Tarag Maltavar. I'm like, why does that make sense? So I want to look it up. Yeah, so that's why I switched the formulation. Yeah, he's coming from the Tehari Mount Tabor.
Right, so over there...
No, but it's still, you still have the same assumption. Because if the meaning, as long as there's a possibility for the Isha to be Kumbase, so then you could just limit the Drasha of Tehari Mount Tabor to that case.
Right, but I'm thinking that maybe he's getting at the fact that whole Parsha is like a very honest part. The whole thing, Tvasa, Vishach Avimah, you know, like, Kashi Yochim, Vishal Yochim, Nefesh, like, and the whole parsha sounds very much like he's not taking an active role. But nevertheless, that same parsha is the source for Parashat Al Tavor.
You know, that would be the opposite. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, I hear you. But that's in that exact nekuda. You sense I was wavering between the Xerxes Kosov in the context of Tehari Mount Tabor or not, because I was.
That's it. Could be. So why didn't you use Kidneys? So things went like.
Yeah, I hear. Yeah. Right. Okay. So the first, you know, discussion in the Rabbeinu Tam is, you know, the implicit, you know, the Rabbeinu Tam understanding of Karka Ola. So, you know, the more explicit issue within Rabbeinu Tam, and here we're going to go on a little of a tangent, is the Bias Akum aspect of Rabbeinu Tam. So with that, right, the question is, you know, instead of focusing on what he didn't answer, and he didn't answer the Karka Olam, right? The question is, how did he answer the question? So let's just start reading the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam in terms of how he answers why there's no issue of Arayos in the context of Esther and in the context of Be'ilas Hayom. Is that happening? We'll just read the first couple lines of Rabbeinu Tam, and then we'll get back to the rest of the Arayos tomorrow. We'll stop there for now. So what did Rabbeinu Tam basically answer?
Because his
Zera is. Exactly. Zera is not Miyuchas Achra. So you're going to see that, especially, you know, based on, you know, the Hemshech of Rabbeinu Tam, the Rayos, the back and forth, the rejections, you know, we're going to have to analyze, you know, the impact of Bias Akum on a lot of different contexts. First, we're going to have to analyze, as we're going to start discussing today, in the Bias Akum on Gila Rayos. We have to see the impact of Bias Akum on the Isser Lebo'o, Isser Lebal, and Isser Lesota. We have to discuss how the factor Bias Akum impacts all those different realms, and we're going to see it's going to have a different impact in different realms depending on what the nature of each of those realms is. But first, just starting off with the opening line of Rabbeinu Tam, right, which is the part needed for our sugya, is that, right, the question is, why isn't there a problem of Gila Rayos here? The answer is, Bias Akum is not subject to Gila Rayos. And then he offers this this Hesber, which seems very difficult to understand. It's that because of Zirmas Susim Zirmasim, because the Zera of a Goy is not Miyuchas Acharav, somehow there's no Gila Rayos. So the big question you have to ask is, what's the connection between those things? Why is the lack of Yachas between a Goy and his Zera undermine the violation of Gila Rayos? What's the connection between Yachas and Gila Rayos? So you're going to suggest three different approaches to this question. I think today we're only going to get through one of them. That's my plan. So we'll get to the job. But there, it's three. You can have your job. The first approach is very bichurish, that basically the lack of Yachas between a Goy and his children is a simen to the lack of a maisa bia. Right? And the idea is that the fact that there's no yachas between a guy and his children is a simen that there is no maisa bia with an akum. And once there's no, and assuming that the idea is that, you know, the only time a zera is miyuchas achar the av, right? The only time you have yachas is when there is a ma'aseh bia. So one way to say it is that therefore nakiyah is where you see that there is no yachas that could be indicative of the fact that there's no ma'aseh bia. So this approach seems to be taken by a number of mafarshim. Number one is the Shita Bigbetes, which, you know, we photocopied here. If you look, you know, you go for Aaron, the Yeshi. At the opening line of the Shittim Kabbat says, it seems, you know, anyone else have the Yeshi?
I do.
The way Rabbeinu basically the Shittim Kabbat says, is in Ksuba Sigimon Beis, Dibur Maschol V'Ivra basically characterizes, you know, the Shittim Rabbeinu Tam. He adds one important line. So, go for it. Right there. Right? So the way the Shita in the Gebetzes again formulates the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam is that the end result is that there is no status to the Bia of Akum. So again, plugging that back into Rabbeinu Tam, the idea seems to be that, right, because remember, Rabbeinu Tam doesn't say that. Rabbeinu Tam only talks about the lack of yachas. So to put the two together, it seems like the Shita Mikbetzes is understanding that the lack of yachas is indicative of the lack of a Maisa Bia.
Okay.
Doesn't Rabbeinu Tam have a line that's just like Yes
Behema?
Yeah, the question is,
if it's a Behema, everything is Mutter.
Well, it's not
Mutter, but it's not
no.
It's not a rise.
It's not a rise at all.
Yeah, but the question is, yeah.
This is more Chamor, the way than a Behema.
Okay.
For everyone.
Okay, but yeah, all we're saying is that, you know, the comparison to Behema can just be saying that it's not Bechal Arayos. Not necessarily telling you why it's not Bechal Arayos. I'm saying it's just less clear. I mean, the Shita Mikbetzes is, you know, much clearer. He says the Bia is Obi Kachavim Eino Bia. It's, you know, it's pretty explicit. That's one raya to this approach. The other raya to this approach, again, a little less explicit, is if you look very closely at Tosfos and Ksubis, right, when he's developing the Shita of the Rivam, right, when the Rivam, you know, is countering and arguing on Rabbeinu Tam, Rivam has a line where he says, no, Rabbeinu Tam, you're wrong, because Bias Mitzri Havya Bia. Right, so the implication is, like, you know, a lot of times you can tell what, you know, the other side of the Machoke is when you focus on one side, right? If Rivam is coming and saying, oh, I'm proving that you're wrong, Rabbeinu Tam, because really Bias Mitzri, Bias Akum really is a Bia, yeah, the strong implication is that the basis of Rabbeinu Tam is that Bias Akum is not a Bia. So again, both from the Shita Mikbetzes, you know, characterization of Rabbeinu Tam, and from, you know, the Tosfos and Ksubis itself, you know, at least the way it characterizes the Rivam sheds light on the nature of Rabbeinu Tam. Oh. So along the lines of this approach, so Rav Schachter in Peace in Eretz Tzvi, this is Simon Tez Zayin, I guess, Os Hey, yeah. So basically, similarly, you know, interprets Rabbeinu Tam in this matter. And takes this approach to say that the basis of Rabbeinu Tam is that, right, when there is that the lack of yachas indicates, you know, the lack of a ma'aseh bia, with the major assumption being that you only have yachas when there is a ma'aseh bia. And then the way he applies this in a very big chiddush, a big, big issue that came up when it comes to, you know, in vitro, intravenous fertilization, right, IV. IVF, I think that's referred to. IVF. The big question is there a yachas? Right, that's the case where you're creating a child without a ma'aseh bia. So the big issue there is whether, basically, whether that child is miuchas after his father. That's one issue. The other issue is whether they're going to be mamzeros issues. So again, it's like a chumra and a kula. It can apply a lot of different contexts. This is Rav Schachter basically proves from this Rabbeinu Tam. And he says, oh, this Rabbeinu Tam proves to us, right, that you only have yachas when there's a ma'aseh bia. And that's why Rabbeinu Tam holds that when there's no yachas, in the context of Akum, that's a reflection of the lack of a ma'aseh bia. So he says, in the case of IVF, where there's clearly no ma'aseh bia, so therefore you lack yachas between the child and, you know, the genetic father. So again, Rav Schachter is taking this approach to Rabbeinu Tam, if he quotes the Shita Mikbetzes and these diukim, but again, taking this assumption that the basis of Rabbeinu Tam is this idea that the lack of yachas is reflective of the lack of a ma'aseh bia, and therefore he has this nafkamina, very important nafkamina, it's a big issue amongst the poskim, In the case of IVF, basically he takes a stand and says the lack of ma'aseh din in that context will result in the lack of yachas. This is the last thing we covered today, before, you know, we'll pick up next time with the other approaches, is within this approach, right, that there's no ma'aseh bia, right, that the, you know, that the bia with an akum, basically lack status of, lacks the halachic status of a ma'aseh bia. So the question is, we know there's an iser to be bol and akum. There's a din of kana'an pogam bo. So then, how will this approach understand the iser of bias akum, which is mechayev misa in the form of kana'an pogam bo? The two suggestions. So either you're going to say that, where we saw this earlier in the year, that basically there's a different geder of bia for a different dina, which is bichedish, to say that perhaps, while basically the standard of bia for gila arayos is different than the standard of bia required for kanayim pokemon. And therefore, even though in the context of gila arayos, we don't consider this a maisa bia, and therefore it doesn't trigger all the dinim related to arayos, such as yihar v'havor, perhaps for the din of kanayim pokemon, there is a maisa bia.
What do you mean? It's all around this. The man is a Jew.
Right? I think there's a machlokas whether it applies in both contexts. Happens to be. But will that... I'm saying shouldn't apply in that... And then, wouldn't you say the same thing there?
No, it's his zera.
It's his zera.
It's only Zerma's... I'm saying the zera is the man. The man is Jewish in that case.
Okay, that'd be another way to get out of it. That's a good point. But I think there are the Rishonim who apply, you know, the Kanaim Pogam Bo in both directions as well. So I guess the question for that case, where, you know, the Isha is the Yisraelis and the man is the guy. So the other way to say it, again, so the first way to say it is to say that basically there's a different chalos of Bia for different contexts. I'm trying to think if somewhere else we had a parallel notion of this. What? Is specifically in this? Okay, leave that for now. And just really quickly, and the other answer is that perhaps if a chiddush that maybe you don't need a ma'aseh bia for kanaan pogam bo. It'd be an interesting idea for kanaan pogam bo that, as we'll see, in a parallel to a later issue we're discussing by Isser Labal, we're going to see that perhaps the koveya for a certain dinam is not a formal ma'aseh bia. There might be some type of merit of sorts, and therefore perhaps you have a parallel notion by Kanaan Pogam. Well, in a Hanami there is no Maisabiyah, but yet there's a Mechai of a Kanaan Pogam, but perhaps because, you know, sometimes you formulate rebellion against the Jewish people, the Am, different ways to say it. But again, two options: either there is a Maisabiyah for Kanaan Pogam, Bichidish, or there's a different Geder of Maisabiyah in different contexts, or that there's a Mechai of a Kanaan Pogam, even without a formal Maisabiyah. So we'll stop here and we'll pick up next time.